When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to DubLab during our 2019 membership drive. If DubLab has helped you in making your days and nights more magical, please consider supporting our inclusive and passion-fueled organization by becoming a member today. For more information, please head over to dublab.com/support.
Hello and welcome to In Conversation, a DubLab podcast where each week we will bring you interviews from the DubLab radio archives.
DubLab radio indeed. My name is Frosty. The program is Celsius Drop, and we are in the midst of our annual membership drive. So I just want to give you a little pep talk at the top of the show. 20 years strong, 20 years of sharing music that knows no bounds. We do it each and every day for you here in Los Angeles, as well as through our sister stations in Germany, Spain, Japan, and now Brazil. DubLab is worldwide, nonprofit, listener powered. So please, you are a listener. Why not help power us? Just a little reminder, if you're paying for any sort of media streaming service or any other kind of monthly little blip that gets sucked out of your bank account, make us a blip. It's easy. It's quick. It's painless. I donate every month to DubLab. Don't ask me what day of the month it happens, because it just flows out, and it's a pretty small amount, but it builds up to a major impact for DubLab. So visit dublab.com right now. You'll see all of the goodness available. We give back to you not only in the music, the thoughtful commentary, the events, and on and on and on, but also you get some incredible thank you gifts. So visit dublab.com, become a member, and that is the most impactful way to support DubLab. Building a member base is really important for us, and it shows that that this is a mission that many people are behind. That's the truth, and we are speaking power to that truth. So let's do it. Speaking of truth and power, love, light, delight. We have one of my favorite humans here, right here in the studio, Linnell George. How are you?
Good morning. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing good. Thanks for coming on the show.
I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So you braved one of these rare LA rainy days to make your way to the studio.
May rain.
And we're thankful for that. You know, and all of us optimists out here can look forward to these flowers and blossoms that are going to come in this desert landscape. Speaking of a desert landscape in Los Angeles, how long have you been in LA? You're not an LA native, right?
I actually am a native.
So what is the connection to New Orleans? Well, this is a deep family connection, I'm guessing.
It is. It's a very deep family connection. And my mother is from New Orleans, and I started going to New Orleans at a very, very young age. So I feel in certain ways I can claim both.
That's good. Connecting to heritage and also having another space that's inspiring. I mean, I see through social media and talking to you and just kind of absorbing what you're up to, that's an important place to you. As a Los Angeles native, mm-hmm. I'm curious, you know, Los Angeles, I think some of the myths are being dispelled in recent years as people start to discover the real joys of mm-hmm. LA. Some of those joys are so deep below the surface, and mm-hmm. exploration pays off. Mm-hmm. For you as a native, what is the kind of the elements that rise to the top for Los Angeles that mm-hmm. keep you here? Are there some kind of main attractions?
Number one, it's people, because for me, people is place, or, mm-hmm. you know, and people are place.
Yeah.
And getting to know place through in neighborhoods at that neighborhood level. Mm-hmm. And so otherwise we would stay in our tiny little squares. So when I think about that, I think about the adventure of, well, I love space and I love the different terrain that exist in Los Angeles. So that whole beach to hills, you know, to, you know, beach to mountains thing, I love. And I love big water, you know, so I like to go look at the Pacific. I'm not like hanging out at the beach, you know, to like, you know, be on the sand and in the sun. But I really like being at the edge of everything, and it's very inspiring. And also to be up in the hills, I'm you know, up in Griffith Park or Altadena, hiking pretty much two or three times a week, every week. And I love looking at that and kind of taking it all in.
It's a very urban place, but a very natural place.
And
even the mixtures of the two, you know, in the Los Angeles River, to go down there in this wabi-sabi kind of beauty of this space where you see a great blue heron next to a submerged shopping cart. It's like, it's really wild. If you look through a little pinhole, there's like this great wilderness within the city. Has it always been natural for you to articulate that feeling and connection to place and space and people through writing? Because you're a writer and you're very talented one at that.
Thank you. Yeah, I think I started at first writing almost in reaction to the fact that I didn't see my city in movies. I didn't see it in books I was reading. I mean, there are all kinds of books about LA that I grew up with, and most of them focused on Hollywood or Beverly Hills, or, you know, I think about when Lesson Zero came out and it was like everyone thought that's what LA was. And I was like, no, it's not. There are other things. And I think I started writing to fill in those spaces and write about personal experiences and my friends and my landscapes. Again, people are place. Actually, in sort of like this magical quality of LA where you just turn a corner and there's something hidden there, and LA demands something of you. It demands your participation.
I love that you say you weren't seeing your city in media. It's funny, you see Los Angeles, but you're right. I think what you're saying is the actual reality of the space and the dynamics of it, and
the day to day,
the micro neighborhood, and the overlap of Los Angeles is really incredible. I'm a huge fan of Google Maps and Waze, just because through these algorithms and satellites saying, well, this is a faster route, you're then moving through unexpected channels and courses of Los Angeles. And I've discovered these micro neighborhood kind of spaces that are incredible. It's a city that seems infinite, and you do articulate it so well in your writing. I just want to give a quick shout out to your most recent collection of essays and photos, After Image, Los Angeles Outside the Frame, which is incredible. That's something that people can seek out. That's your most recent book. And there's more. We'll talk about it. Music is also very important to you. You wrote a really, we were able to print a really wonderful essay that you wrote in. We have this radio zine that we put out, and I just love this, this essay about connection to radio and music, and through our work together in the past, you're someone who you're connecting not only, people and places and spaces and writing and words, but also sounds too. Has that always also been a part of your connection and the way that you identify, you know, a sense memory or something?
Absolutely. I grew up in a house full of music. My mother was a musician. Was the reason she came to LA was to study music. She had studied music in New Orleans, got a scholarship to come out here to study. So she played piano. I played piano. My brother is a musician. My mom played music all the time. It was in the car. We would go to record stores as much as we would go to the library, you know, like to check out our books. We'd also go to, you know, the neighborhood record stores.
And was there a favorite record store, and is that record store still around?
It's not there anymore. There was one we used to go to called Westchester Music, and they did LPs as well as they had sheet music and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, we could go and take care of the stuff for our school, and then we could go and buy our records. And
business or pleasure?
Yes, both. Exactly. Both. We could hit both at once. But that place was a great store. And Tower Sunset. Renee's when I got older on Melrose, and Aaron's, of course. Yeah. Those are places I lived, you know, as a kid, and saved my lunch money to buy records. So, which my mother found out later, and she said, "Why didn't you just ask me?"
You know, it's good to extra,
exactly.
So we're going to dive into some music and some words and more. We've got a Sly and the Family Stone tune queued up. Do you want to comment on why you selected this?
If I could have a theme song when I walked in the room, it would be this one. I never tire listening to this song, and usually I can't listen to it once. Mm. I have to listen to it about 10 times on repeat. It's just the funkiest, sexiest beat.
Well, we invite all of you listeners to walk in, walk out of whatever room you might be in. This is If You Want Me to Stay by Sly and the Family Stone, as selected by Linnell George. We'll be back with more music. Here we go.
Whenever I hear Sly Stone, I really do think about being a little kid on a schoolyard, on an asphalt playground, on the jungle gym, or, you know, on the merry-go-round, and, you know, hearing this music that was blasting out of people's houses and out of their cars. And it was 48th in Wilton. There was an elementary school I went to, and our schoolyard was very multiracial. And I remember when I saw Sly and the Family Stone probably for the first time was probably on Soul Train, and I was looking at them and I was like, wow, they are like my schoolyard. You know, they're, you know, this multiracial. And also the way they self-present it. I mean, it was just this sort of like fantasy of like, well, let's just put this all together and just see how it goes. And that's what LA felt like then. And so that's when I hear that music, I hear a sense of hopefulness.
Amazing. Yeah, it's there for sure.
Yeah.
And driving around LA to and from school, or doing errands, or going to the beach, or, you know, at home, was the radio on a lot?
Yes, the radio was on a lot. And we all had the stations we parked on. And I listened in the morning to KGFJ, the Soul station, which was then turned into the Cat for a while. And then K-Day, of course, when they started broadcasting. My mom, total jazz fan, and was, you know, KBCA, that which then turned into KKGO. So, and on Sunday she would always listen to the Latin jazz shows. And then she also played a lot of Latin jazz on Sunday, so she'd pull out her LPs and cool. So yeah.
And would she play along ever to the radio, or was it separate?
It was separate. But sometimes she'd be inspired by something she heard on the radio.
Interesting.
And try to go and like kind of work it out on the keyboard.
Was there peace at home with the radio dial, or were people vying for control?
Definitely vying for control in the car.
Yeah.
And my brother and I especially, but then sometimes my parents too, like, enough of that stuff, you know, love that noise. We want to hear whatever. But my mom, she really loved listening to what we listened to.
Yeah.
And maybe that was also part of her being a teacher and a musician, but I think she liked to stay on top of things.
So. What was the kind of the spirit of the radio that most attracted you? Either specific presenters or just the style? And it's different now. I mean, things have changed.
It is different. And I think I still look for that experience. Two things. One, personality. I was drawn into personalities. I used to listen to J.J. Johnson, on K-Day. If I think back, and Kate, and I love that platter patter, you know, between songs. I was just listening to, there's this great YouTube video of one of the KGFJ DJs just between music, and he's doing the weather and he's doing ads, and it's just magical looking at this, and it's a time capsule from the 70s. So that I was always pulled into.
But
Platter patter.
I love that.
And the other thing was traveling on the radio and being able to go different places in the music or into different communities. It would make me like, oh, I'm curious about this artist. And that would mean that I would be going to a different venue, you know, and meeting different people. So radio's capability of doing that and like kind of pushing us outside of what was familiar.
Yeah, powerful. Yeah. And I love this meta exploration of radio on the radio right now.
Yes.
So you floated my way, Young Americans by David Bowie. Is this something also that would be on the radio, and what station would this have floated out on?
The significance of this song, and I was thinking about this because I was asked to pick a record a little while ago that was significant in that it kind of opened a door.
Mm-hmm. This for Heat Rocks, right?
This for Heat Rocks.
Yeah, great podcast. Morgan Rhodes was on this show a while back, and she's incredible. Yeah,
it was such a great afternoon. I told them afterwards, I could have done this for hours. But the reason I remember this, I heard this for the very first time on KGFJ, and it was a big deal to hear. It was a crossover, but crossing over the other way, you know. So it was a quote unquote pop artist going soul, and Fame was of course the first song I heard because that was the one that was the hit. Yeah. But then they started playing this, and it just sort of pulled me like, who is this David Bowie?
Let's find out. Okay. It's Dublab with Linnell George. Frosty here with Linnell George. We're floating through some memories connected to music and LA radio waves coming back to you. Did some David Bowie followed by War, and you're right. That's War is LA radio and has continued through somehow one of these survivors that is still floating on the airwaves. And
so true,
incredible. So we were talking a bit ago about After Image, Los Angeles Outside the Frame, and I see these beautiful pages have fluttered open.
They have fluttered open.
Would you like to read a little passage from the book?
I will. I'm going to read from a chapter called Flow, which is about moving through space here, since that's what we're doing, space and time. And it's also about being a native and about, or being a long-timer here and the complexity. So,
well, let's hear it.
Okay. Flavor. Sometimes when people ask where I'm from and when I respond Los Angeles, I can see something pass through their eyes, an on-the-fly calculation at work. Really? You don't seem like it. It's always meant as a compliment, but it's one that irks, hangs in the air. I spent years trying to sort out the proper retort, only to conclude that it doesn't deserve one. Ever since I can remember, the response always varies or modifies, and it is a manner of assessing the way in which LA exists and changes in collective imagination. If Los Angeles itself is ever evolving, being an Angeleno must be something that, by consequence, is too not fixed. That it is an identity in flux. What far more interests me is how Los Angeles exists in our own imagination, influenced by that perception, how a sense of place affects and shapes us, TV beams in weekly scripted scenarios, movies seduce. But so many of us who grew up around narrow narratives of place work against or away from that. We're not all chasing the round the next bend dream, but often we are the fruit of those who came in search of it. For us then, the kids who lived in those off-the-radar places, on the map, a dead-end street, below the 10 or over the bridge, finding your path, your way, meant finding your terrain, your tribe, and your heart.
These spaces in LA, I mean, Los Angeles, as you mentioned before, you weren't seeing your Los Angeles on film, and it's hard to capture the true essence of LA. Mm-hmm. and it's shifting block by block by block. Yeah. And some of the best things are happening behind the scenes, behind closed doors, and are very community based,
right?
Which
exactly.
is incredible. I love this idea of like catching that momentary glimmer in someone's eyes or expression, because humans can't hide as much as they think they can. There's these little even squints of eyes and these things that tell so much. For so long, yeah, Los Angeles was nothing, or was a joke, or was, you know, bubblegum or something in people's eyes and ears and minds. But I love the fact that you're calling that reality out in writing. And Allison Anders, who's sitting back here, who's coming on the show next, also has, brought a lot of truth of Los Angeles to the screen. And I think it's rare so that true. Those kind of true narratives are showcased. Did that embolden you as a writer to really try to bring that to the forefront?
Oh, absolutely. And when I talk about like these images, these things that we needed to see in mm-hmm. order to change, finally things were showing, you know, there were movies and writers, and I think about Allison's work, mm-hmm. how important it was, you know, to me, you know, because like, okay, these girls, I recognize them. I went to school with them, mm-hmm. you know, it was finally like slang and backdrop. Mm-hmm. And again, that sort of like just elusive sort of way LA is, like just that powdery light sometimes that comes yeah. through, that because the air is, we're going through a period of, you know, May gray or June gloom. So mm-hmm. you've got that kind of watery quality to the air. And only an Angeleno, I think a true Angeleno sees that, those yeah. things, those subtleties. And that's the stuff that is really important yeah. to me. It's like, okay, that's my home.
So there's been a influx of population. I think some people, it can be attributed in a way to, it's almost this like Instagram magnet of people framing their lives and then saying, wow, it's like,
yes.
you know, if you're in New York in April and you see a photo and there's, you know, bougainvillea and, you know, magnolias and all these things blossoming, it looks appealing. But people are framing their lives, and that's a frame that is also mm-hmm. this imaginary
yes.
kind of slice of
yes.
of a moment.
Yes.
So the true LA is beyond and transcends all of that stuff, and it's hard to capture. But you've done such a great job through various essays and your body of work building this alternate kind of true image of Los Angeles, and also a reflection of your own personality and where you're coming from, your experience. But part of your experience is not only Los Angeles, and we touched on that at the beginning.
Yes.
This connection also to New Orleans, mm-hmm. Philadelphia, etc. It is possible to have many places in life that are important mm-hmm. to you and that you feel connected. I always feel that tell people Los Angeles is the best place to live, leave, and return to. And mm-hmm. it makes you appreciate it, but it's the shifting of perspective that kind of gives clarity, I feel.
Right.
You've selected some music, and mm-hmm. I've got a Billy Paul tune lined up here. Can you tell us a bit about the significance of this song?
That song, I talk about schoolyard and radio. Those bring it together in LA.
Yeah.
We had moved to a different neighborhood, different school, and we were integrating that neighborhood and school. And there, I think it was one of the very first times, you know, I was really thinking about what difference was and race was. And there were other African-American students there, or I should say Black students, because what we're going to listen to is about that identity. But I thought about how important music was, especially then, as an anthem of like solidarity and reminding you of like who you are and what your culture is and that it's important.
And was this something where you'd hear a song and that was something that you kept to yourself and personally, or as an anthem of self-identification, did you ever say, okay, I want to play this for other people so they understand who I am?
I think once we found each other, our little group of friends, I think we played it, Black students, we sort of played it as kind of a moment of solidarity. We'd turn it up on our Panasonic Toodaloops. You know?
Platter, patter, toodaloop.
Platter, patter, toodaloop. And listen and give it. And then we would share with everybody else, like, oh, okay, what's going on over there?
We're going to share this portal into the Toodaloop with you, Linnell George, special guest here on Celsius Drop. It's dublab.com. Here comes Am I Black Enough for You by Billy Paul. So you're saying you felt some extended energy in the room here.
Yes, that was my mother's in the room right now, because this was a record that I literally grew up with. But first hearing her sing this song, and I thought it was a song she made up.
Amazing. She might have, I don't know.
And she'd play the piano and she'd sing this. And then when I finally heard it, I'm like, hey, that's my mom's song.
Amazing. Was she typically, as she was playing the piano, playing known songs or improvising, or a little bit of both?
She'd do a little bit of both. She played known songs, and she liked to keep up her finger dexterity and her skills. So she practiced well into, I mean, my teens. She was, and it was sort of a model for both of us, my brother and myself, seeing how, like, okay, you know, you do this, and it's something, even though you're not playing in public, something you do all the time. It's amazing. Part of who you are.
And she was bringing in different, you were saying she was listening to Latin jazz on the radio and digging the New Orleans sounds, right, and heritage. But the jazz in Los Angeles,
right,
has also been strong and overlooked in a way. I mean, there's been so many incredible talents who are from here, who've come through here and spent time here. Did you immediately know that was in the air, that had existed historically here, or has it been a discovery, a rediscovery?
It's funny. I just finished writing a piece about Central Avenue, about Jack's Basket Room, and the fate of Jack's Basket. So you'll have to read that in Alta Magazine. I remember my neighbors talking about Central, referencing Central and the clubs and what was there. And then, of course, when I became a reporter, then it was an excuse to talk to people. So I actually became more, I guess, educated about it through my discussions, ongoing conversations with Buddy Collette, the jazz musician who was responsible for helping to move the amalgamation of the Musicians Union. Mm-hmm. And Buddy talked a lot about it, and that's how Central lit up for me. And I began to learn about who stayed and who left. And so figures like Charles Mingus, for example, who grew up in Watts and went to New York and made it bigger. But Watts was part of who he was, and he wrote beautifully about that those neighborhoods in his autobiography.
And there's a lot of migration from the South to Los Angeles.
Absolutely.
A lot of folks from Texas, New Orleans, and bringing, you know, it's people bring their past with them, and then kind of Los Angeles is a place to kind of then insert those feelings and thoughts and ideas.
Absolutely.
And places like Jack's Basket Room and all these incredible spots. It was a hopping, incredibly vivid place. Let's float into some Mingus. This is you've brought Jump Monk here. Yes. Anything you want people to have in their minds as we launch into this?
One of the things as a child, I was fascinated with the language around some of these records that came out. This idea of a jazz workshop. Mm. And that's what this sounds like to me. It sounds like you can feel them building and putting things together and taking chances. And of course, it's an homage to Thelonious Monk. Mm.
So we're going to workshop it a bit here. Mm-hmm. We have Linnell George on the airwaves. It's dublap.com. Are you a person who loves listening to music as you drive?
Yes, and especially when I'm moving in traffic rather than sitting.
Sitting
helps. I mean, music helps when I'm sitting too. But this idea of driving at night and moving through space and listening to music and mostly instrumentals and soundtracks and atmospheres, you know, that's, yeah, I take off, you know, and I'm paying attention.
Well, it's good to do a little dreaming while you're moving and kind of scoring the landscape in a way. You know, yes. I feel like Los Angeles has that, the dynamics of, as you mentioned at the very top of the show, you know, this idea of the mountains and the ocean and everything in between.
Right.
The glamour and everything else. And you've done such a great job, again, you know, sharing a slice of Los Angeles that's very personal, but also speaks to a lot of people here, kind of giving voice to the reality that's here, that people, you know, don't know how to express, maybe, or they're expressing through their lives. And I want to just give another little shout out to your most recent book, After Image, Los Angeles, Outside the Frame, collection of essays and photos. And I'm so thrilled you were in residency at the Huntington in the Octavia Butler Archives,
yes.
Pasadena. Genius.
Yes.
And this new book, the name alone is pulling me into A Handful of Dirt, A Handful of Sky, The World That Made Octavia E. Butler. Mm-hmm. When can our eager minds look forward to this?
I'm saying 2020.
Beautiful. That's a good.
Yeah, 2020.
Nice. That seems futuristic.
Yes, doesn't
fitting.
It? I think she would like that.
Wonderful. I can't wait for that. People can also follow you online, linnellgeorge.com, or possibly in slow LA traffic.
That's right. Exactly.
Many ways.
I'll wave.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
what you do, all the great creative things that you bring to us. So.
Thank you. And thank you for doing the work, too. I mean, It's a joy.
And that brings me to the fact that it is the Dublap membership drive. And if you're out there listening in the world, visit dublap.com. We do this once a year, and we urge you to become a member. It's painless. It's easy. Think of the last thing you spent $10 on. It's probably a trick because you can easily forget that thing. Even the moment after you suck your latte and your stale scone down, it's gone already out of your mind. But Dublab exists for a lot longer and is here for you at any moment, 20 years strong. And we'd like to be here for 20 plus years. So visit dublab.com. You're probably already there. Become a member now.
In Conversation was produced by Dublab, a nonprofit radio station broadcasting live from Los Angeles since 1999. Sound editing and theme song by Matea Bain. For more programming, visit dublab.com. And thank you for listening.